So that, dear listeners, was the Bhajan Tutor for this week. And if you were listening to the program before the Bhajan Tutor actually happened, this week's quiz is about sending bhajans with the phrase Adi Ananta. So that's the quiz for today, and as always, you can send it to the special mail ID where we have the bhajan quiz responses sent to. So with that, it's time now to move to the next program of today, the penultimate segment of the Thursday Live, that is Shravanam, Mananam, Dhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari Shankar from the Shri Sathya Sai Central Trust. We offer our loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet as we start this program. We are going through the fifth discourse in the series, and the discourse is about Keno Upanishad. The series, of course, is the 1991 Samukho series. We played a few clips. We are pretty much towards the end of the discourse, in the second half of the discourse, I could say. So before we go into what Swami has to say this week and to probably give a brief summary of what Swami had spoken last week, I invite Brother Hari to join us. Saram Hari.
Saram, Saram Prem.
So last week we had that Swami telling that story from the Keno Upanishad.
Yes.
Where I think it's the Lord Brahma coming and materializing a blade of grass and inviting the gods to try to burn it, to try to blow it away, to try to wet it.
Yes.
Yeah, and as we said, that's one of the important stories in the Keno Upanishad. It's mentioned. Were you saying from where that story is initially coming from in the...
No, it occurs in various parts of the Upanishads and in different different Upanishads. Sometimes the presentation varies, but it's the same theme. So each of the gods there represent the different senses.
Right.
So the sense of, the smell or the sense of... So all of these gods, they represent those senses. And the Keno Upanishad, as listeners might remember, it speaks about what is the force that lies behind these senses.
Right.
While we experience the world primarily through the senses, we are not aware of what is in the background of the senses. And this Keno Upanishad awakens us to that.
Right.
So in that, so this story is an allegory that shows us like how each of the senses, they think that they are the foremost.
Right.
They are the strongest force in this universe.
Right.
Including, finally it is Indra, the god of the senses himself. Right. So he himself is deluded into thinking that he is the, strongest of them all. And yet, at that moment, goddess Uma, she appears in front of him, and because he's totally puzzled as to what is happening, right? At least he had the, the discrimination at that moment, to say that this is something out of the ordinary. So let me, with all humility, investigate what this is about, right? And then it happens that Lord Uma says that all this was the work of Lord Brahma, but he was upset with your arrogance, and that's why Lord Brahma has moved out, and I am here to tell you what it is. And here Swami actually gives us the significance of why Goddess Uma has appeared in that place, and he says that Goddess Uma represents desire, and that's the final frontier, right? So when you've surrendered your arrogance, you've surrendered everything, now are you ready to surrender desire itself? So when you are ready to surrender desire, that's when God will reveal himself to you.
Right.
So that is the allegorical message of the story.
Right. And towards the end of that story, of course, Swami very beautifully, steers the discussion towards love. But there, the point which is being made is, as you're saying, that allegorical reference which is being made, here are the senses, and with the senses is Indra, who oftentimes we know that the reference is to the mind.
Mm.
So it is like the senses have certain abilities. The eyes can do a certain task.
Mm.
The tongue is good at doing certain tasks. The other senses are good at doing certain tasks.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the senses stand for talents, which are unique.
Mm.
And the mind, as we all know, stands for knowledge, because it is the one which is kind of collecting all this information and giving a more comprehensive idea of what is around.
Yeah.
So Swami is saying that, you know, the knowledge cannot take you anywhere. The talents cannot take you anywhere.
Mm.
That's what Swami says towards the end of it. It's not the talents which is represented by the senses, or it's not the knowledge which is represented by the mind.
Mm.
And Swami goes on to say that it's only love.
Yeah.
Because if you look at it, you know, many times when you see, you have this, you know, the goal which is divinity or whatever it is, whatever, let's say perfection.
Yeah.
I mean, if people have difficulty by with the idea that you're kind of rushing towards divinity, it's all to a journey towards perfection or wholeness.
Yeah.
If you look at it that way, it is only fair that that is accessible to everybody.
Right.
Right. It cannot be specific to certain talents. It cannot be specific to intellectual abilities. It has to be accessible to everybody, so that path should be something which is commonly accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
And that can only be love. Yeah. That can only be sacrifice.
And also, see, Swami at the beginning of this discourse, he did mention that when what we speak about as divinity is beyond the pale of the senses. Right, it's something, because the senses by nature are outward going, whereas, but so the origin of love is something very mystical. We have very little understanding, you know, of like what love is, how does it originate, right? So this is our only connection with the Lord. And here actually I'm reminded of a very strange experience that I once had. Okay, so I was, see, when you're in Prashantilinam, you're sitting in Kulwant Hall, you're always surrounded by people of extreme talent.
Right.
Swami used to attract the best of the best. So you'll see, like, even among the students, you'll see very talented singers, musicians, and you'll see people who got extraordinary ability, oratorial abilities. And of course, like, you see, you know, the very accomplished academics and industrialists, all of them come to Swami. And, you know, one day I was just sitting through one of these musical programs. And, see, all of them, they get so much attention from Swami. So somewhere, this thing started in my head, you know, I wish, you know, that I was so accomplished, so very accomplished, that Swami would notice me, right? And at that time, I had so many dreams. I wanted to be the best physicist or the best mathematician. And when you see a singer, you want to be the best Carnatic singer, you know. So somehow you want, you know, you wish that you had Swami's attention. So my mind was roaming along those lanes, you know, of thought. And I don't know from where, suddenly it was as if somebody was speaking inside my head. And the voice said that, let's suppose that next life, you know, this is a hypothetical thing. Mm-hmm. That next life you're there, you know, you have a chance of being with Swami. And you have all these talents, right? You have the choice of picking up these talents and you'll be so close to God.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you were given, like, that you'll have absolutely none of these talents, but you'll be even closer to God, right? Proximate. Would you take it, you know? And suddenly, you know, in a flash, without thinking, inside my mind I said yes. And at that moment I was looking at Swami, and, you know, in those days Swami used to be very impassive. He used to not show much emotion on his face. But it was a very strange thing. Just Swami, one look he gave towards me, and I could see, like, emotion welling up within him. Which was like his face, you know, so much emotion when he looked at me, and then immediately he turned away. But for me, like, it gave a very strong message that above everything in this world, if you choose God, that's what pleases him.
Right.
So the world offers you, like, so many choices, just as the senses do. But if you can choose God each single time, right, that the amount of joy it brings him and therefore us, that is immeasurable.
Right. In fact, you know, a discussion that you're having a couple of days back, where we were talking within ourselves whether, you know, how much of a perfectionist Swami is. Right? You know, we often say that Swami is a perfectionist, he looks into details. It's true to an extent, but in many ways, Swami was not necessarily looking for perfection. Because when we look around, you know, the simplest thing I can say is, Swami did not want the most perfect speakers on his radio. Had it been the case, I wouldn't be here. Right? You know, when he had the bhajan singers, they were not the best.
Right.
I mean, if Swami really wanted the best, there would be ustads and, you know, pandits who would be singing here. Swami never wanted perfection in that sense, but Swami was after the perfection in each one of us, trying
of
to get at the best.
Mm.
It was always, you know, talent and giving chances for the talent was only used as a means to respond to the love which is behind
it. Yes.
Anil Kumar sir often tells, you know, when Swami was choosing whom to have as his translator, apparently Swami came and asked him, you know, whom do you think is better? Are you a better translator or is Jayma a better translator? Jayalakshmi Gopinath, who you know, recently merged in Swami. So Swami asked him this. So he said, Swami, what are you asking this question? See, I studied in Telugu medium till all my schooling. You know, I've learned English properly only in my, you know, when I came to college. And here is a doctorate in English literature. And she did her English doctorate under none other than Gokak.
Dr. V.K. Gokak.
Such an accomplished English lecturer. She is an English professor.
Right.
And absolutely in any way, if you see, she's a better translator than me. I mean, she's any day the best one available right now.
Yeah.
So then Swami told him, but I don't want the best. Right? I mean, I'm not looking for the best.
Yeah.
I'm looking for somebody who will do the work and, you know, who will be able to convey and who will be able to reflect what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I don't want
yeah.
the perfect. I don't want the best. It's literally like that. And we see that, you know, many of our students when we've seen and many of the artists whom we have seen, I think people don't know this. People don't realize. People think that Swami attracted the best, the most accomplished artist to himself.
Yeah.
But many of these artists began their career here.
Yes, yes.
You know, when we spoke to Anup Jalota, he says that incident, you know, during the 50th birthday, Swami suddenly picked him up from the crowd and asked him to sing.
Oh.
And when Manoj Kumar was producing the movie Shirdi Sai on Shirdi Baba, Swami said that ask him to sing a song. And that's where his career started.
Right.
You know, we think that, oh, Swami has the best talent coming to him. In fact, some of the other, one more artist, he said, you know, a very famous artist, he said, no, I came to Swami when I was a 10-year-old boy. And Swami looked at me and said, you're going to become a very big artist. And, you know, literally, that was the word which was his confidence throughout his career.
Right.
So literally, I mean, when you're saying that incident, I think it's about just expressing that desire, Swami, I would like to come closer to you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
if it has to be academics, let it be academics. If it has to be a talent, let it be a talent.
Yeah.
And that's what Swami is saying, that, you know, it's not knowledge which is going to get you here. It's not your talent which is going to get you here. And something which, as students, when we saw Swami, we saw the richest of the rich come to Swami. You saw the most accomplished come to Swami. So somewhere that idea seeps in that even if you achieve all this, you finally have to come where I'm sitting.
Right.
Right? So the feeling of gratitude of to have started the journey here instead of go around and then come back here.
Yeah.
And the other beautiful thing which Swami was telling is that statement, I think we called notice even to that statement. Swami says that, you know, it is not through the senses that you can attain peace, but it is in controlling the senses you can attain peace.
Yeah.
So it's almost like Swami saying that, you know, here are these senses. They will not get you anywhere. And here is this mind. This mind will not get you anywhere because it's not able to do anything. But it is in this mind exercising this control, exercising this discipline with these senses is the only way that, you know, you can turn towards the right direction.
Right.
In fact, I think the rest of the discourse is going to be about that.
Yeah, and you can see that like this Keno Upanishad is basically laying the foundations for the yoga. So in the yoga, Patanjali yoga system, like Niyama is like one of the cornerstones towards attainment of union with God. So this is the, you know, closing stages of the Upanishad. So it has taken us through the journey of like first having us investigate like who is the seer. Like when you're perceiving something, who is the seer, right? So, and it hints that what the Brahman is that which illumines the mind itself. Not, the mind cannot illumine Brahman, but Brahman illumines the mind. Likewise, it is the eye of the eye, right? And the mind of the mind, and so on. So, after this, it takes this turn, you know. So it is now showing us the right way in utilizing the senses. Right, it has brought us back to who we truly are, right? Instead of being driven by the senses, you know, the master of the senses, and now having placed us in that position, it is guiding us in like what's the best way to utilize the senses.
Of course, towards the end, Swami says about students being in the prime of their abilities.
Yes,
In fact, reminded of a conversation which one of my juniors had with Swami in the interview room. Swami was talking to him, and Swami asked him that suppose a marriage is being performed, who will be given the, you know, who will be served food first? Because the main attraction in the marriage is about the feast, which is you know, laid out. So Swami said, who will be the first people to eat in the feast? So the boy said, Swami, the main guests, the important people will have first. And Swami said, then after that, then the rest of the guests who has come for the marriage will have. And Swami said, after that, then probably the family will sit and have. And that's the tradition. After everybody's gone, the hosts have. Swami said, after that, so Swami, the workers will be in the mandapam or something. They might have. Swami said, okay, after they finish also, if food is left. So he said, Swami, usually a lot of poor people will come and, you know, ask if there's any food left. So we'll give those people. Swami said, after giving them also, if there's food left, what you'll do? Swami said, Swami, there's nothing else. We'll have to waste the food. We'll have to throw away the food. And Swami said, if you, after you throw away the food, what happens to the food? So he said, Swami, some dog or crow will come and eat the food, you know, from the bin. Then Swami said something which was very, very moving. Swami said, you all offer your love to God like this.
Wow.
Swami said, God is like that dog and crow.
Oh my God.
Which comes in the end, you know, after you've served everybody, you've given your love to your family, to your friends, to your colleagues, you know, to all those people whom you want respect from. Finally, whatever is left over, you throw it to God. And Swami said, even that I come and take. It's not like I say that, how dare you come to me in the end. And you know, this is what Swami was telling. And it's so profound. And in fact, putting it juxtaposed to another interaction which Swami had in Vrindavan, in Kodaikanal, Swami was talking to boys, and Swami was referring to two boys who were with Swami from the primary school. Okay, so Swami looked at them and Swami said, see, you know, when you offer food to God, you take the best leaf, a tender banana plantain leaf, and you serve the food on that. Okay, and Swami said that when you come to me young, it is like that.
Right.
I'm like that. You're offering food to me fresh. But most of you, what you do, after you finish eating, the leftover with the leaf you offer. So that is like coming to Swami after you've, you know, spent all your talent and all your abilities. So literally Swami is saying that why can't you turn to God when your senses are fresh?
Right.
When your senses are, you know, are still in their prime, and can you turn to God? Can you turn to goodness?
And the mind is malleable.
Absolutely. You know, there is still scope for a lot of change at that age.
Because actually Swami harnesses this idealism of the youth.
Absolutely, right.
Right. It is, when we are young, we are not given to cynicism of that the world is a, you know, like a, it's full of love and truth and ideals. Right. We are always looking towards that. You know, if you see most of the movements, they start with the youth aspiring for freedom, and the youth are the ones who are taking society forward, you know, like new trends that come in are always brought in by fresh minds, right? So, and at that is the time when Swami actually, see the summer course, I think like earlier years, it used to be open not just to students, but to any young person. You could register and be part of the summer course. So Swami invested so much time, you know, in these, in students. I can still recall that one architect who was the architect for the Whitefield Super Speciality Hospital, he was sharing that he came to Swami primarily through the summer courses.
Oh, okay.
You know, Swami used to give him the task. He was given the task out of the blue. Of course, Swami had chosen him for that, to maintain Swami's room, you know, during these times. So Swami used to be so accessible, you know, to people. So he says, now when I look back at it is such a huge blessing. And at that time I used to always fear, you know, Swami will come and he'll find faults in the little things. So the Swami's way of training, you know, very, very particular about small details. And he used to fear, oh my God, Swami's going to come now, he's going to scold me if I did this wrong or that wrong. But he says that training has now stood me, you know, so well he's a very accomplished architect and very well known in his profession.
Anukumar sir tells us that beautiful incident when Swami asked him to get the university auditorium ready for the summer course. So I think there were about 1,000 seats over there.
Right.
Swami said, get every seat checked. It should not be wobbling. Swami said a lot of elders are coming.
Right.
You know, they should not sit and then slip and fall or something like that.
Yeah.
And you don't, generally we don't use all the seats in the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
When you're using it only for the campus, it's just one third of the hall. So Swami said, get all the seats checked.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently Anil Kumar sir goes and calls all the students and he says, each of you go and check each in this one. So sit on it and see if it's firm and all that. So everything is checked. And the next day Swami comes. Swami says, have you checked all the chairs?
Mm.
So he said, yes Swami, everything has been checked. What was not working has been repaired.
Mm.
He said, are you sure?
Mm.
He said, yes Swami, boys have checked all the seats.
Mm.
And then Swami told him, called one of the boys. He told him, go to the 10th row. Seat number so and so, sit on it. And he sat on it and started wobbling.
Oh.
And he said, this is what you've checked. And, you know. And of course, Anil Kumar sir, inimitable style, he said, Swami, till now it was fine. And you only did something to it. But really, you know, that's where Swami is probably the perfectionist aspect of Swami expressed.
Yeah.
It's not in him choosing instruments, definitely, but in training, you know, in how uncompromising he was in what he expected of each of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, I think if we start talking of this aspect of Swami, we'll keep going on and on. So we'll go to the next part of the discourse.
Yeah.
As we said, I think from now on, Swami makes a mention that the way forward is the control of the senses,
yes.
Not in the expression of the senses as such.
Yeah.
So I think Swami is going to go into that into a little more detail. We'll go into the next clip.
Right.
A few educated individuals will say, do you know what for these eyes are given? It is for seeing.
Yes,
true, the eyes are indeed given for seeing. But see the good. Why should you see bad? Why have you been given the mouth? It is for eating. But will you eat grass? Will you eat excrement? Will you eat cow dung? No, we won't. We should enjoy good things, good sights and good food. So each of the senses have to be applied in the right path. We will not realize the problems when involved in the actions. But there is no escape from facing the consequences in time. Keep bad words under control. Keep bad listening under control. Keep bad thoughts under control. Keep bad actions under control. This is the true path of spirituality. It is in this regard it is said,
see no evil, see what is good.
See no evil, see what is good.
Hear no evil, hear what is good.
Hear no evil, hear what is good.
Think no evil, think what is good.
Think no evil, think what is good.
Talk no evil, talk what is good.
Talk no evil, talk what is good.
Do no evil, do what is good.
Do no evil, do what is good.
This is the way to God.
This is the way to God.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి దానిని మనం సెగ్మెంట్ రీతిలో మనం ప్రయత్నపూర్వకంగా సాధించినప్పుడు మునుముందు దీని బాధలకు మనము ఎన్నో కష్టములు అనుభవించవలసి వస్తుంది.
If we do not achieve this in the right direction through our efforts, eventually we will have to face a number of problems.
యవ్వనము చాలా అహంకారంతో కూడినటువంటిది.
Youth is an age filled with ego.
అందులో మానవుని యవ్వనము క్షణభంగురమైనటువంటిది, మించువలే మించిపోతుంది.
That too, man's youth disappears in moments. It melts like ice. It passes off quite swiftly. Falling prey to the pull of the senses and youth that are so momentary, we are ruining our future. So within this time itself, we must make efforts to bring the senses under control.
ఇదియే కేనో పరిషత్తు ఋషులకు కాని మానవులకు కాని దేవతలకు కాని ప్రబోధించినటువంటి సద్బోధ.
This is the precept of Keno Upanishad to all these sages, humans or gods.
Chintiye kaadu.
Not only this.
Devatalaku manavulaku kudanu chakkani sariyaina aadarshanni kudanu nirupistu vachindi.
It has also been presenting ideals for both gods and humans.
Oh manavuda, neevu cheseetundi paapa phalam kaani punya phalam kaani govuto paalu pindinam takshame paalu icheetundi govu vantidi kaadu idi.
O man, the fruits of your actions, be it sins or merits, are not like obtaining milk the moment you start milking a cow. Instead, it says it is like sowing a seed. The seeds don't grow into trees and offer fruits as soon as we sow them.
వృక్షము కావడానికి కాలము తీసుకుంటుంది.
ఇట్ టేక్స్ టైమ్ టు బికమ్ అ ట్రీ.
కొన్ని సంవత్సరములు తీసుకుంటుంది.
ఇట్ టేక్స్ అ ఫ్యూ ఇయర్స్.
తదుపరి కాయలు కాసినప్పుడు కొన్ని నెలలు తీసుకుంటుంది.
ఆఫ్టర్ దాట్ ఇట్ టేక్స్ అ ఫ్యూ మంత్స్ టు బేర్ ఫ్రూట్స్.
కాయలు ఫలము కావడానికి కొన్ని దినములు తీసుకుంటుంది.
దెన్ ఇట్ టేక్స్ అ ఫ్యూ డేస్ ఫర్ ద ఫ్రూట్స్ టు రైపన్.
కాబట్టి ఇది కేవలం ఒక దీర్ఘకాలంతో కూడినటువంటిది.
దేర్ఫోర్ దీస్ ఇన్వాల్వ్ లాంగ్ పీరియడ్స్ ఆఫ్ టైమ్.
జాగ్రత్తగా నీవు మెలుగు.
ప్రొసీడ్ కేర్ఫుల్లీ.
ఈనాడు నీవు పాపం చేసిన తక్షణమే నాకేం ఫలం వచ్చింది, నాకేమి రాలేదే అని వెర్రవీగవచ్చు.
టుడే వెన్ యూ పర్ఫార్మ్ అ సిన్, యూ మే అరోగెంట్లీ థింక్ వాట్ కాన్సిక్వెన్స్ హెస్ కమ్ టు మీ, నథింగ్ ఆఫ్టర్ ఆల్.
కానీ ఈ విత్తనం ఇంకా ఫలమైపోయి ఈ ఫలమును నీవు అనుభవించడానికి టైం తీసుకుంటుంది.
బట్ ఫర్ ద సీడ్ టు బికమ్ అ ఫ్రూట్ అండ్ ఫర్ యూ టు రిసీవ్ ఇట్ ఇట్ విల్ టేక్ అ వైల్.
ఇది మాత్రం తప్పినది కాదు.
దిస్ ఇస్ ఇన్ఎవిటబుల్.
ఏదైనా తప్పినా ఇది తప్పింది కాదు.
ఆల్ ఎల్స్ మే ఫెయిల్ బట్ దిస్ ఇస్ ఇన్ఫాలిబుల్.
జాగ్రత్తగా మనం ఈ యొక్క బాల్య వయస్సును పవిత్రమైన మార్గంలో ప్రవేశపెట్టుకోవాలి.
దేర్ఫోర్ దిస్ యంగ్ ఏజ్ మస్ట్ బి కేర్ఫుల్లీ యూటిలైజ్డ్ ఫర్ టేకింగ్ టు ద సీక్రెట్ పాత్.
పురస్కరించుకుని స్టార్ట్ ఎర్లీ, డ్రైవ్ స్లోలీ, రీచ్ సేఫ్లీ.
It is said, therefore, start early, drive slowly, reach safely.
మనము ఈ వయసు నుండే మనం చక్కని ప్రయత్నరూపకంగా సాధించాలి.
Right from this age, we must make conscious efforts and achieve it.
So that, dear listeners, was the next clip, and it's a short one. And as today's program itself is a bit short because of the program in the mandir. That'll be the only clip we'll be playing, but I think there's much to discuss about this one clip because there are some three or four very important points that Swami is making, distinct points. Of course, all of that what Swami said was very important. The one thing is, you know, this idea of Swami saying, Swami has mentioned this many times when he's speaking about the senses. And Swami starts by saying that. You say that eyes are meant to see, and why not we see anything? So the idea of the senses being a barrier in themselves, or a filter in themselves, trying to bring in what is good and leave out what is unhealthy, in a sense. We see that with certain senses. For instance, you know, your tongue always gives you that idea of what is palatable and what is not good for the body. Like, I think that will be in the next part of the discourse, of course. And that's something which Swami says. Or for that matter, the skin, which tells you that whether the living conditions are hospitable or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether you need to do something. And I think somehow we don't carry this forward in all the other senses, especially when it comes to the tongue, the eyes and the ears.
Yeah.
Right? See whatever you pleases you, eat what, speak whatever comes to mind, and hear whatever comes to your this one, and we don't realize that all of this become fodder for the mind.
Yeah. Right? Yes. So the because as Swami says, the toxic effects of the intake from those senses are felt like much much later. They're perceived much much later. I remember this in the Hyderabad youth, there was one particular a member of the Hyderabad youth.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the interviews, Swami suddenly turned to him and he said, hey, you have this bad habit. And he was like looking at Swami.
Which one?
Which one? Yeah. And he was looking intently at Swami. And Swami said, see, I will tell you. He mentioned a name of a particular bakery in Hyderabad.
Okay.
And he said, you and your friends, you come in bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And you stand opposite this bakery and you keep watching all the members of the opposite sex as they come and go. Mm-hmm. You know, he said that will have a deleterious effect on you. Stop it immediately.
Oh.
You know, so the, like Swami is omnipresent and it's very, very rare, you know, we get this opportunity. The Sadguru points out at this, you know, what might seem like a very innocent thing, but the high standards which Swami expects from each one of us by way of behavior. I recall another incident similar to this. This was a person who wasn't a devotee. He had come here on some government accreditation team.
Okay.
They were deputed by that, and I had the opportunity at that time to serve them, you know, like guest serving, and I was given one of the chances to be with that team. So I recall at the end of their accreditation, after they had given their final report, Swami called them to speak and for an interview, and after they came out, by the time I had built a rapport, and I was pretty curious, what did Swami share with you? But when he came out of the interview room, I remember for close to an hour, he could not speak. You know, they were housed in the VIP guest house here. And I walked with that person, very young, maybe 30, 35. And I walked with him back to his quarters, and it took him very long to recover from what he had witnessed in the interview room.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, you know, he started mumbling. He said, he knows everything. He knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still trying to get at, sir, can you please share what he said?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, Swami knows such intimate details of my life. And Swami said, you have this bad habit of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, not only do you smoke, but you do this, you know, he used to add a drug, possibly heroin or cocaine, I don't know which.
Okay.
He and his friends, they used to add it, so just make a special cigarette out of that, and they used to smoke that joint. And Swami mentioned the names of the friends, and the place, you know, secret place that they would all go to do this. And Swami said, drop it right now. He was so shaken, you know, by that. He said, there is, like, it's completely erased. The desire for that vice is completely erased from my mind. And the only thing that could have erased that is the enormity of Swami's love. You know, nothing else. The way he said, and Swami actually called him aside and told him this.
Right.
It wasn't that he humiliated him in front of his other team members. Called him aside and said that is the amount of concern had, and because that person was still young, so the habit could be broken even then. The mind is quite, you know, flexible even then. But I really, you know, Swami, with so much compassion, right? He could have chosen to be among the saints, among the sages, who have reached a, you know, advanced level, and it's an easy task to maybe take them over, you know. But to
very true. I think it's something which even an argument, it's a mistake which we always make. The ultimate state, we often say, even in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, you know, it's beyond duality. There is no good and bad when you see it from that level. Where you transcend right and wrong.
Yeah.
When you are guiding a person who is in the process of getting there, you can't come from that level.
Yes, absolutely.
You will have to come from the level of, yes, this is right and that is wrong.
Yeah.
That discrimination has to be there. You know.
Yeah.
I think, and that is why, as I was telling somebody the other day, you know, when we came, 1999, 2000, and the later parts of 2000 when we came, Swami was 75, going towards 80, but we never felt that. Because Swami was always, you know, communicating to us and instructing us from a level where we could completely relate to it. You never felt that here is somebody, first of all, the age, because, you know, it's a very wrong thing to talk about age when you're talking about Swami, and the level, you know that the level of purity he's coming from.
Yeah.
And he's beyond the duality of good and bad, right and wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, the forcefulness with which Swami would say, you're talking about looking at people of the opposite gender. I mean, some of these things, the force with which it would come, one thing was Swami would shake us out of it. The other thing is, that desperation, as you're saying, that you're young, you can be corrected now. It has to be done now.
Yeah.
And in fact, I remember listening to a recording of a Trayi discourse, an old one, and the way Swami was putting it across, Swami was saying that, see, flies, dogs, cats, all of these indulge in the such activities.
Yes.
Intimacy with the opposite gender.
Yeah.
If you also are only keeping yourself to that level, then do you imagine what you're missing out?
Yes, absolutely.
And Swami is saying that this is the age, there is so much more, as you're saying, that idealism is so much more important.
Yeah.
That why do you want to miss the opportunity by just getting stuck to these pleasures?
Yeah. I think last segment also we were discussing this. We often, the youth, and in fact the society of today totally believes in freedom. And we are saying what we mean by freedom is the freedom to indulge in the senses.
Right.
But here the almost the opposite is being thrown at us. What the real ideal of freedom is, when you are actually free of the deleterious effects of the senses.
Right.
When, as a master said, freedom is when you are free to do whatever is appropriate, whatever is your duty, that's when you can say you're truly free. Like, for example, our duty towards our parents to look after them, right? So, very often you see that for our own selfish reasons, we might say, that this is slowing me down, I don't have the time, I'm too busy to do these. But Swami reminds us that it's a challenge to us. Like, are you conscious of your duty? Right? Are you free? Like, you want to be free to do what you want, but are you truly free? That you can make that decision, I will look after my parents, I will, stand for them when they require me the most. That, he says, is true freedom.
Right.
When you have that discrimination, that control over your mind to be able to judge what is appropriate and what is not, and take the right decision, that's when you are truly free.
Right.
And also coming to one more thing, the brain is naturally geared to look for immediate satisfaction of the senses. That's what it looks to. And Swami is saying that, you must try, as the ceiling on desires and all these programs try to achieve, some measure of control over the senses. Don't go for immediate satisfaction. And I recall in this connection, an experiment, a psychology experiment, I think you also mentioned it earlier, the marshmallow experiment, in which very young kids, a marshmallow is kept in front of them, and they are the control subjects. The people are performing the experiment, then they move out of sight, and the children don't know that they're being watched. Right? And then they're given instructions that you don't eat the marshmallow till we come back. Right? So they watch, how many of...
You'll get two marshmallows if you're able to...
That was the reward. And they watch, So they said that the people who could delay the gratification of that immediate gratification, who could delay it and, wait for the rewards to come later, there were people who the kids couldn't control themselves, and some of them actually immediately ate the marshmallow. And they said they could correlate this to the leadership abilities when these kids grew up, and they could see a clear connection that the leaders were those who could delay the gratification. That is, they had some measure of control over their senses at that very young age itself.
Right.
And Swami, through all these discourses, through his teachings, he is having us develop that for our own good.
Right.
There's nothing that he benefits from these.
In fact, there's another important side learning they talk about in that study.
Mm-hmm.
One of the factors which really determine, one is of course the ability of the kid to hold, control oneself.
Yeah.
But the other thing is the faith that the child has in the person who is giving this instruction.
Oh, okay.
They say that how much faith does the
trust.
Child have that after, they will keep up the promise.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you look at it, when Swami is saying that, it looks like you're going to benefit in the short run, but you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So much of our taking what Swami is saying in the face value and, taking it to heart, believes on how much we really trust Swami. Because Swami is saying that I know it, I'm telling you.
I'm telling you,
is how it is.
Yeah.
And when Swami says, whenever Swami has said this, you know, see no evil, see what is good, always be good, see good.
Yeah.
I think for people who, problem is with people who have too well read into spirituality, this seems too simple.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what goodness, you're talking about goodness, we're talking about the higher intellectual gymnastics. But when Swami says this is it, you know, so very emphatically Swami is saying this is the true path of spirituality. That's what Swami says in this clip. But that faith that, you know, Swami is saying that, so this must be it.
Yeah.
And the ability to follow it, I think it's also intertwined. You know, that is where the love aspect comes. When you really have that love for Swami, you want to do, you want to please Swami, and you know, that love, faith, everything is there. So spirituality is, I think it starts and ends there, right?
Yeah, it does, because I think it's very important also for us to be cautious of this fact just that you mentioned. See, I was just reading a couple of days back, you know, a debate whether your knowledge of ethics, does that help you when the time actually, when you know, fate or destiny actually tests you on your ethics? And they say it has absolutely no correlation. You know, they see, you know, even professors of ethics, they say they're just as, you know,
vulnerable
or have the inclination to cheat or to plagiarize as anybody else in that field. Likewise, students, you know, they the intentionally students are given the chance that they could cheat on their tests, and they're cheating on the very aspects of, you know, how to lead a honest life, or, you know, what constitutes honesty and integrity in one's life. And in that assignment, they have cheated. so it's very, very cautious that an intellectual understanding of what constitutes the right thing to do doesn't at all guarantee that you will do it.
So I think we'll have to conclude the program here.
Yes.
Dear listeners, we'll... So this is for this week. Do join us again next week. I think starting today, we're going to have programs in the Mandir every day. So you can, of course, join us live with the webcast every day on our website. But that also leaves us with the predicament that the programs will go later into the evening than usual. So our programs on Thursday might get a bit truncated according to the time it takes for the program to end in the Mandir. So accordingly, do bear with us when we change the schedule as we have done it today. So do join us again next week for the continuation of this discourse on the Keno Upanishad. We humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. A short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu with the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you. Jai Sairam.